It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Ukraine announces truce next week. U.S. confirms failed attempt to rescue hostage in Yemen. I'm Ray Kugel reporting from Washington. Ukraine's President Petro Poroshenko ordered a new ceasefire next week as part of a push to end months of fighting with pro-Russian rebels near the Russian border. Russian and Western media quote rebel leaders as saying they will support the initiative. Russian President Vladimir Putin defended his country's annexation of Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula and accused the West of using the Ukraine crisis as a pretext to impose sanctions on Moscow. He delivered his annual State of the Union speech Thursday and referred to Crimea as Russia's spiritual ground. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov exchanged sharp comments on Ukraine at an international meeting in Basel, Switzerland. VOA's Al Pessin reports.
Secretary Kerry put the blame for the Ukraine crisis squarely on Russia, with his Russian counterpart sitting nearby. Kerry on Thursday accused Russia of providing weapons and other support to separatists in eastern Ukraine and violating the Minsk Protocol that it helped negotiate, which called for a ceasefire and other steps to end the crisis. Lavrov rejected criticism of Russia's behavior and said it supports the Minsk agreement. Lavrov says Russian military experts are working with the Ukrainian government to settle on a ceasefire line, which could lead to the withdrawal of heavy weapons by both sides. Al Pessin, VOA News, London.
At least two car bombs killed as many as 37 people Thursday in Iraq, apparently targeting Shiites and Kurds. They struck in a Kurdish neighborhood in Kirkuk and another in the Sadr City region of Baghdad. This is VOA News. U.S. officials have confirmed that American commandos failed to rescue American journalist Luke Summers in Yemen recently because he was not at the raid site. Six Yemenis, a Saudi, and an Ethiopian were rescued in the operation. Summers was kidnapped in September 2013 in Sana'a, Yemen, by an al-Qaeda branch in the Arabian Peninsula. The Yemen-based militant group released a video Thursday featuring Summers threatening to kill the 33-year-old photojournalist if the U.S. government did not meet its unspecified demands within 3 days. The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab says it shot down a Kenyan military plane returning from a combat mission in Somalia. Kenya says the plane crashed near Kismayo due to technical problems while returning from a mission in southern Somalia. Pakistan says it's arrested several people from major cities for their alleged links to the Islamic State. Ayaz Ghul has details.
Speaking at a weekly briefing in Islamabad Thursday, Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Tasneem Aslam confirmed that certain individuals suspected of links to the Islamic State are in custody, but she did not reveal their number.
Police has made arrests in connection with wall shocking. So those investigations are underway. I don't think those who were arrested, there were any foreigners.
The spokesperson noted that Pakistan's army has undertaken major anti-militancy operations in recent months in the country's northwest, and it is determined not to allow any terrorist outfit to operate from Pakistani territory. Ayaz Ghul for VOA News, Islamabad.
New York City says it is going to retrain its 20,000 police officers after a grand jury decided not to indict a white officer in the chokehold death of an unarmed black man. Mayor Bill de Blasio says it was essential that police treat people of all races equally. U.S. civil rights leaders condemned Wednesday's grand jury decision. Turkish prosecutors have indicted 13 Turkish ultranationalists on charges related to an attack on 3 U.S. soldiers in Istanbul last month. Thursday's indictment charges the attackers with violating public protest laws and causing insult and injury. Residents in the central Philippines are stocking up with emergency supplies and fleeing the coast ahead of the arrival of a powerful typhoon. It is expected to arrive Saturday in eastern Samar province. Police in the United Arab Emirates have arrested a local woman on suspicion of stabbing to death an American school teacher in a restroom in a shopping mall in the capital, Abu Dhabi. Authorities say the suspect also tried to plant a makeshift bomb at the home of an American doctor. The bomb was dismantled and no one was hurt. Police say the victim in Monday's stabbing was killed by a woman wearing clothing commonly worn by Arab Muslim women in the Gulf region. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Friday, December 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Somalia's Al-Shabaab says it shot down a Kenyan military plane as President Kenyatta receives a report on fighting terrorism.
The president asked for recommendations that would ensure there is better, if you like, environment in which security agencies deal with terrorists.
Manua Isipisu is Kenya's presidential spokesman. A UN official calls for access to a town in Sudan's Darfur region where mass rape allegedly took place. The DRC government says it is ready to repatriate former rebels who it has pardoned. And African trade ministers meet in Addis Ababa to discuss free trade.
It's going to be a lot easier to trade within the African countries. But as of now, you have the non-tariff barriers, for example, which is all about logistics, cost of doing business and moving goods from one region to the other.
Olusegun Olatunji Agenga is Nigeria's trade minister. Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe has again lashed out at his vice president for plotting to overthrow him. And South Africans mark the first anniversary of Nelson Mandela's death. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kenya's presidential spokesman says a parliamentary committee has given President Uhuru Kenyatta a report that aims to clear legal and administrative obstacles hampering the government's fight against armed groups such as the Somali Islamist group Al-Shabaab. This comes as Al-Shabaab said on Thursday that it shot down a Kenyan military plane returning from a combat mission in Somalia. Kenya said the plane crashed due to technical problems. Presidential spokesman Manua Isipisu said Mr. Kenyatta asked for the parliamentary report after the latest massacre of 36 Kenyan citizens by Al-Shabaab militants.
As you know, the president, when he addressed the country this week, he said that he had asked the security actors as well as committees of parliament on defense and security to look at the security architecture and make some recommendations on how to clear administrative and legal hurdles that impede the fight against terrorism. And he has received that report. I can tell you that it does have tough measures to deal with terrorism, and that's about all I can tell you.
Will this also strengthen security agencies' actions to combat terrorism, especially with recent development of terrorist acts carried out by armed groups, including Al-Shabaab from neighboring Somalia?
I think the important bit is that the president asked for recommendations that would ensure there is better, if you like, environment in which security agencies deal with terrorists. I mean, the country is at war, and when you are at war, you need to ensure that you are in a position to combat your enemy in a way that is complete. We cannot put the lives of Kenyans at any more risk, and I think that the measures the president has received and on which he will apply his mind will be able to go a long way in dealing with some of the issues.
How soon will these recommendations be implemented, especially when, as you said, Kenya is at war and soft targets or ordinary citizens are being attacked by these armed groups?
You will recall that on Tuesday, the president said that he had asked Parliament to extend its current sitting. It was due to go on recess so that it can deal with this matter before the Christmas recess. The Parliament has obliged and has extended its sitting by 14 days. So logically, one would expect that the measures would be presented to Parliament within that time.
We all know that the Christmas festivities are coming. A lot of Kenyans could be celebrating this Christmas festivities. Some security experts expressed concern that this could present some more soft target for elements of Al-Shabaab to attack. Has the government increased security to ensure Kenya's protection as enshrined in the Constitution?
Our security alertness is very high. We remain very alive to the real threat that we could be attacked. I mean, when you are at war, you do take these considerations on board all the time. I can't give you operational details because, as you can imagine, even Al-Shabaab people would be listening, and they're sympathizers too. But I can say that this government is committed to safeguarding its citizens, and it will continue to do so.
Manua Isipisu is Kenya's presidential spokesman. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Nairobi. A senior United Nations official said Thursday that further investigation is required into an allegation of mass rape in Sudan's North Darfur region last month. From the United Nations, viewers Margaret Bashir has more.
UN peacekeeping chief Hervé Ladsous told the UN Security Council that due in part to the heavy presence of Sudanese soldiers and police during a fact-finding mission's visit to Tabat on November 9th, further investigation is necessary to verify allegations that 200 women and girls were raped there by Sudanese troops the last 2 days of October. He is heard here through an interpreter.
I would underscore that only an independent investigation by UNAMID will address the concerns over these serious allegations and therefore urge the government of Sudan to grant UNAMID immediate and independent access to Tabit and its population so that these reports can be verified.
UNAMID is the acronym for the joint UN-African Union mission in Darfur. The report of the mass rape was made on Radio Dabanga, a Netherlands-based station that broadcasts to Darfur. The allegations were attributed to a village elder. The Sudanese government denied UNAMID access to the village for more than a week before allowing a team in on November 9th. Subsequent requests for a small team to return to Thabit have not been granted. Sudan's UN ambassador, Ramatullah Mohamed Asman al-Noor, told the council that the government did not interfere with the UNAMID team that visited Thabit on November 9th, and that if it did not like the conditions for the investigation, the team should have left instead of going ahead with the interviews. He dismissed the rape allegations as false and propagated by an opposition radio station. He's heard here through an interpreter.
Is it conceivable that 200 women and girls can have been raped in a village without anybody avenging the honour of their daughter or the wife, or without anybody reporting the incident?
The peacekeeping mission's relationship with Khartoum has been fraught with difficulties, including attacks on peacekeepers and constraints on their movements in Darfur. In the latest development, the government last week demanded two UNAMID human rights experts immediately leave their Khartoum office. Peacekeeping Chief Ladsous told the council that they had no choice other than to comply, but that it was unacceptable. He also noted that Khartoum has publicly called for UNAMID's exit, noting it is not a matter of UNAMID leaving tomorrow, but an exit strategy must be agreed to. The Darfur mission has nearly 16,000 soldiers and police and costs $1 billion a year to run, but has been widely criticized for years for not being more effective. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
After successfully silencing his deputy, Joyce Mujuru, in a purge, Zimbabwe's 90-year-old President Robert Mugabe on Thursday called for unity in his ruling ZANU-PF party. Opening the party's sixth Congress yesterday, Mr. Mugabe again lashed out at Mrs. Mujuru for allegedly trying to overthrow him. Erwin Chifera has details from Harare.
Those are ZANU-PF members at the official opening of the party's 6th National Congress in Harare today, where Mr. Mugabe continued his verbal attacks on his deputy Joyce Mujuru, calling her a thief who stole diamonds and gold as she planned to overthrow him, in apparent reference to the deputy president whom he has accused of plotting to kill him and assume the leadership of ZANU-PF. Mr. Mugabe said it did not matter whether one was a minister or deputy minister, anyone who is corrupt would be sacked and face prosecution.
Those who committed the crime, including corruption, will be prosecuted once we get the evidence. And if you are a minister, deputy minister, or civil servant, you'll be sacked. But we want evidence. Give us the evidence.
Ms. Mujuru and ministers like Didmas Mutasa and Nicholas Goche did not attend the meeting. Mr. Mugabe said Ms. Mujuru and the alleged allies had not been blocked from attending, but had decided not to come. Mr. Mugabe described them as criminals, saying their behavior was not in line with the principles of ZANU-PF.
You see, we have gaps on the top table. Where are they? We did not expel them, and we did not bar them. We wanted them to come and tell their story. They went away without telling us, like criminals.
ZANU-PF youths had, however, threatened to deal with Ms. Mjuru if she dared attend the Congress. Mr. Mugabe, who was flanked by his wife, Chairman Simon Kayamoyo, Speaker of the National Assembly, Jacob Mudenda, and President of the Senate, Edna Madzongwe, said he had known for a long time that his deputy was allegedly plotting to topple him. He commended his wife, Grace, for exposing the alleged plot to oust him from office.
The plan was hidden, but it was exposed by Amai Mugabe, who said it was bad to remove me from office through illegal means. That's when we saw all these issues being exposed in public.
Mr. Mugabe said he was saddened that ZANU-PF leaders had not behaved in an exemplary manner, adding this had divided the party. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, December 5th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. The Democratic Republic of Congo's government says it has dispatched two delegations led by cabinet ministers to Uganda and Rwanda to help repatriate about 1,500 former members of the M23 rebel group. The two delegations are scheduled to arrive in the neighboring countries today, Friday, to begin the process of bringing the former rebels back home. Information Minister Lambert Mende says the administration has allocated $10 million and is waiting for international partners to contribute additional pledged forms to ensure the DDR program is successful.
The deputy foreign minister is going to Kampala and the deputy interior minister to Kigali to follow up all what is necessary for the way back of our compatriots, Congolese, who found themselves within the former rebel group M23, because we need them. As President Kabila said, this is the time for peace and reconciliation.
So will they be pardoned for the activities, or they would have to face the justice system, or the president will pardon them?
Some of them were already pardoned, but they fail to come back home. Even those about which we have not yet finalized the file for their amnesty will come back and wait the finalization of these amnesty processes at home.
So how has been the cooperation between Kinshasa and Kigali, as well as Kinshasa and Kampala, to resolve this matter of bringing your compatriot home?
Of course, if our colleagues are welcomed in Kampala and Kigali to cater for this way back of their compatriots, it is because we did enjoy the support from our counterparts. I think that is the case. On that file, I think that we have ended by having the same view about returning to Congo Kinshasa of these Congolese who found themselves within that rebellion.
Now, Honorable, one of the concerns of people is some of these combatants might not have the necessary skills to be reintegrated into society. What is the government plan for these combatants when they return?
This is not at all relevant. We are having now already almost 5,000 of their compatriots originating from other armed groups. They are already following the process of this reinsertion. Some of them are learning some profession. Others are helped to find a job.
Lambert Mende is Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Kinshasa. Realizing a continental free trade bloc has been challenging for the African Union. Martha van der Wolf reports for VOA from African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa, where African trade ministers are meeting.
Africa's leaders decided in 2012 that the continent should be a free trade area by 2017. The first steps of creating the necessary institutions and policies are set to start in early 2015, but progress so far has been slow. The African Union Commissioner for Trade, Fatima Haramasil, told African ministers of trade that more needs to be done to reach the goals set in the Continental Free Trade Agreement, CFTA.
Our continent couldn't grow has lacked depth, being driven largely by commodity production and trade. As a result, it has been non-inclusive, non-poverty reducing, and non-employment generating, and hence is not sustainable in the long run. Africa's recent economic growth, notwithstanding, our continent remains the epicenter of global poverty.
Africa has the lowest amount of intra-regional trade among the world's continents. It currently stands on 10 to 12%, and the AU believes that this can double in a decade if the CFTA is implemented. But even 20% is low when compared to the 60% of intra-regional trade in Europe or the 40% in North America. The CFTA could contribute to improve Africa's competitiveness, according to the AU. But there are challenges on every level, says Carl Schletwein, Namibia's Minister of Trade and chairperson of the meeting.
I think we have large deficits in infrastructure that would well connect us. We have large fragmentation issues with regard to trade facilitation. We have got the same fragmentation with regard to movement of people, but we have similar fragmentations in terms of policy approaches. How do we approach customs policy? How do we approach trade policies? How do we approach industrial policies?
Another major issue for many African countries will be to change the large informal sector, where no one pays taxes, into formal sectors, especially as a large part of custom incomes could disappear once there is free movement of goods. Establishing the architecture for the realization of the CFTA is very important to Olusegun Otiyun Aganga, Minister of Trade of Africa's biggest economy, Nigeria. He says it will create a common understanding between African countries.
It's going to be a lot easier to trade within the African countries. But as of now, you have the non-tariff barriers, for example, which is all about logistics, cost of doing business and moving goods from one region to the other. You need clearer and more transparent tariff policy and trade policy.
There are several regional trade blocs on the continent, such as SADC in Southern Africa and ECOWAS in Western Africa. These will continue to exist under the Continental Free Trade Agreement. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
South Africa this week marks the first anniversary of the death of its most beloved citizen, Nelson Mandela, with several ceremonies that mourn and celebrate the first leader of democratic South Africa. Although he retired from public life in 2009, many South Africans say Mandela's spirit continues to guide the Rainbow Nation. Viewers Anita Powell takes a look back at the man that many South Africans simply call Tata Madiba.
Even a year after his death, Nelson Mandela continues to loom large over his beloved South Africa. His face adorns the currency. His white-haired image beams from billboards, grins from T-shirts, and roars from the banners of his political party, the African National Congress. South Africa's first democratically elected president, who died last December 5th at the age of 95, was more than just a politician. That's why many South Africans affectionately call him by his clan name, Madiba, or by the name Tata, which means father. And as many South Africans believe of their own long-dead relatives, his spirit continues to take an active interest in the world of the living. Government spokeswoman Pumla Williams says the nation is mourning and celebrating their beloved icon at the highest level on the anniversary of his death.
The president has used this opportunity to again thank South Africans at the manner in which they honored Madiba and the whole world. And he has used this opportunity to say, as we mark the first year of Madiba's passing away, we call on South Africans and the world at large to honor the legacy of Madiba.
That legacy is one of reconciliation in a racially divided nation. Mr. Mandela was elected the country's first black president in 1994, 4 years after he was released from prison, where he spent 27 years for opposing apartheid. His efforts won him the Nobel Peace Prize in 1993, which he shared with F.W. de Klerk, the last white president of the apartheid era. Many of Mr. Mandela's friends say they will miss the man they knew, a tall, avuncular figure with a ready smile, a sharp wit, and deep insights. Mac Maharaj was one such friend. He is now a spokesman for the presidency, but in the 1960s and 70s, he served alongside Mr. Mandela in Robben Island Prison, where the elder statesman affectionately called him a troublesome boy, and the two argued good-naturedly about politics. Maharaj says that for him, this anniversary is also a personal one.
You know, one has to accept that people will pass in life, but the friendships endure, and one treasures those memories. They become part of one's own way of thinking and looking at life. And I often look at the experiences that I've shared with him, or the lessons that I have drawn from his life and from his friendship as to how I should conduct myself. And so again, from that perspective as well, as a friend, it is something that I have to treasure. And I have to say that the moments that I managed to share with him were invaluable.
The nation has scheduled many events to mark his death, among them a wreath laying at Union Buildings, the seat of the presidency, and an interfaith service in Pretoria. Mr. Mandela's main memorial service in 2013 was attended by dignitaries from around the world and by tens of thousands of ordinary South Africans who braved the pouring rain to attend the outdoor Johannesburg ceremony. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark, a woman in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Angolan defending champions Interclub tackled Kenya Port Authorities in the quarterfinals at the Africa Women's Club Basketball Championships in Sfax, Tunisia today, Friday. In other quarterfinals, Tunisia's CS Sfaxien engaged Nigeria's Dolphins. Republic of Congo's INSS faced Nigeria's First Bank, while Angola's Primero de Agosto encounters Tunisia's CS Police Orientation. In rugby, South Africa tackled Portugal, while Kenya engaged Australia, as the second leg of the IRB Sevens rugby series gets underway in Dubai, United Arab Emirates today, Friday. South Africa play Canada and Wales in other Group D preliminaries, while Kenya engage England and the United States of America in Group C fixtures. South Africa is fourth in the series standing with 14 points, while Kenya is 14th with 2 points. Turning to football, Egypt's El Ahly host Ivory Coast's Sewe Sports in the return leg of the Orange Africa Confederation's Cup final in Cairo today, Saturday. El Ahly need to overcome a 2-1 first leg loss in Abidjan last week to stand a chance of winning the Confederations Cup for the first time. On the other hand, Sewe Sport seek to maintain their lead so as to hand Ivory Coast their first African club championship title since 1998. In cricket news, defending champions Uganda seek to maintain their winning streak when the ICC Africa Under-19 Girls 2020 Cricket Tournament gets underway in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania on Sunday. The three-day event features Botswana, Kenya, Mozambique, Rwanda, Uganda and hosts Tanzania. Finally, defending champions Uganda and Kenya seek to retain the men's and women's titles when the Castle Light International Beach Volleyball Championship gets underway in Entebbe, Uganda tomorrow, Saturday. The two-day event has attracted teams from Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, Tanzania, and hosts Uganda. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Hey, thank you, Mark. Have a very good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab says it has shot down a Kenyan military plane returning from a combat mission in Somalia. Kenya says the plane crashed due to technical problems. The Kenyan military said the aircraft developed problems while returning from a mission in southern Somalia and crashed in the general area of Kismayo. A spokesman for Al-Shabaab's military operation told Reuters news agency the jihadist group shot down the plane with a missile. And that's it for this Friday, December 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer James Hammond, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing every one of you in Africa a very good weekend.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.